It is episode 180, which is a nice round number.
180, yeah.
Yep.
You were saying you were looking forward to this number.
Not as much as now I'm looking forward here. To 200. Well, 180.
It's a good one. You said that the other day.
It's true. It's because it's half of a circle.
That's right.
The straight line, you know, it's like open horizons. Anything could happen. Optimism. This is an optimistic episode. Well, not really. It's actually not a real. Pessimistic one.
It is a bowl of insight.
Indeed. Today we're continuing our conversation. This is the second of three parts on purity culture, everyone's favorite topic.
Yes.
And we're talking specifically about it as a form of control, in particular, control of women. We should probably introduce ourselves first before we dive into the fun.
There we go.
I'm Mark Van Stuenck. I direct the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And yeah, on Monday, we just kind of dealt with the topic, generally speaking, some of where it was coming from, how it was functioning, what it was doing. We had a lot of really great comments. Very lively, which was is always a lot of fun for us. And so then today we wanted to look at kind of this question of, you know, what is one of the main things behind all of this, right? So in the same way that on Monday I mentioned that, you know, Henry VIII wasn't some pious religious reformer, when he when he created the Church of England, that, you know, this was this political move where he needed more money to build a navy, and he didn't like the Pope telling him what to do, and so he, you know, went all in on this Reformation thing. So in the same way, when, you know, people are told, and it really does fall most heavily on women and non-binary folks when they are told to behave in certain ways because they have to be pure. You know, one helpful question to ask is, what's really behind this?
Right. Yes. Because, you know, I remember how it was, you know, so this idea that, you know, even back then when I was a true believer and this stuff, I felt the conflict of telling someone to their face that they need to stop being so slutty or whatever, and do what God wants for them because God loves them so much. But it didn't feel like I was actually being motivated by altruism when I tell them that. And so, but then I felt that. And so this idea that it's like, even when I was most clearly evangelical, I understood that there was more going on than just trusting in the divine love of the Father. For us to each live the best lives we could live, which is the way it's couched. But it's, and the reason I knew better is because I saw how it functioned. Like, it's used as a coercive thing. And there's all sorts of inconsistencies.
Yeah. And so, you know, going way back in time, right? So first of all, and I always feel like it's important to mention this because we hear so much about biblical family values these days. So the biblical family was, by and large, a polygamous family situation where women were property and had no say in their lives, had no legal rights or recourse to much of anything, and pretty much anything could be done to them. And that's actually what, you know, quote, biblical family values look like. So this is an incredibly toxic patriarchal scene, and the control of women's bodies, you know, is very important to the patriarchy, mostly for keeping track of, you know, whose baby belongs to who, and continuing these family lineages.
Yeah.
And so that's a socio-political issue that's going on. And, you know, what better way to defend this than by saying, oh, God wants you to be pure. because now you're putting this, you know, now you're putting this kind of cosmic spin on the whole thing. And, you know, we had... I had a great comment from somebody, I think it was last week, you know, about the incredible toxic patriarchy of the biblical world and Christianity, and you know, how it's very anti-woman in so many ways. And you know, that's absolutely true. And I think, you know, those of us who are male need to own up to that and identify that and say, you know, this is something that has got to change, and we can't keep perpetuating that in the name of some sort of religious ideal, because that's not what it's about at all.
In a way, this reminds me a little bit of the sorts of conversations around purity. And maybe we'll get into this on Friday. Remind me of the shift that happens with recycling. So part of what religion does is, like, there's, if you don't want to socially enforce something, you try to make individuals feel responsible. So, like, when recycling was becoming a necessary thing, like, we were realizing, oh, there's this environmental degradation that happens when you throw plastic in the countryside. Let's just make individuals feel like police themselves as much as possible, so it's easier for us to police them. The sort of individualistic moral move. And that's what happens with purity culture. It's like, we have these social things we want to enforce, but what we need to do is inject it into them as some sort of religious ideal so that they police themselves. And so purity culture is like this way of reinforcing the individualistic sort of commitment. And then, but when you start getting out of that lane, that's when the social pressure comes on. But most of the time, purity culture works so effectively because it's been internalized. And, and the way that looks is, you can look at anything that causes shame when it comes to sexuality or practice is usually some sort of internalized thing. That's kind of like a good way of knowing what's going on in my head. There's a comment here that I think it's good to bring up earlier rather than later. Hannah asks or says, not sure how do I feel about a purity culture conversation that doesn't include any women? I mean, that's, you should be skeptical of two dudes talking about purity culture on the one hand. On the other hand, we do encourage people to comment and try to take the comments as they're presented, not twist them. Yeah. And also, I think this is one of those things, like, I don't think men should be sitting around talking about purity culture in a way that is them scheming about how to control women. But I think men need to talk about misogyny a lot amongst themselves. We can't just leave it for... This is part of the complexity of emotional labor and doing the work, is men have to get together and talk about their shit. And this is part of that shit. But it's going to be messy because we're going to we have our own perspectives about it, and they're flawed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, to me, it's sort of the same thing that we hear a lot, within the racism conversation, is that, you know, for white people to keep turning to people of color and saying, tell me about racism and educate me about racism, you know, is exhausting and abusive in a lot of ways. And it's like, you know, what we hear a lot about is, no, you know, white people, we need to figure this out and we need to have these conversations. And so, you know, I personally see this as very similar. And yeah, I mean, we have people of all genders included in terms of the comments. But yeah, I mean, this is, you know, men have a problem. And in our country, white men have a big problem. And we need to figure out how to be different. We need to figure out how to be different. And, you know, I saw a post recently about this from a friend of mine, a young woman who actually grew up in Crookston. Who was talking about a woman who was recently killed walking home. And she had had a similar experience. She wasn't killed, but she was attacked walking home, and talking about how immediately in the comments about this, what comes up is, well, you know, what did she do wrong? Mm-hmm. Right. And, you know, did you wear the right thing? Did you walk home when it was, you know, light out? Did you tell your friends where you were going? You know, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, what this woman was saying is, you know, stop talking about what the women did right or wrong. Like, why are we talking about the fact that men need to stop doing this? And what's wrong with men? Yeah. And, you know, I really agree with that. I think that, you know, to me, the problem of purity culture is not about women. The problem is about men. And the fact that, you know, men have taken this religious idea and used it to continue to try to oppress women and as I said, non-binary folks as well. And it seems like, you know, the thing that scares men more than anything else is, you know, a non-heterosexual male person doing whatever they want with their body. Like, that mm-hmm. seems to be more terrifying than just about anything. And that needs to change.
You know, and here's the thing. A lot of evangelicals know it has to change, and so they've gotten sneaky about it. This is, you know, I can't remember if we talked about this in the show, but like a number of years ago now, some folks, we were involved in doing this wonderful, during Lent, we were doing this series of actions tied to a call to repentance. And the hashtag we were using was Silence the Sin. And one of the things that we did was we had a bunch of mostly queer folks gather outside of this evangelical church in kind of a historically gay neighborhood in Minneapolis and had this big banner that said, your queerness is made in the image of God. And we offered communion and foot washing. And then I was there as one of the interceptors, like straight white dude to kind of head people off. And most of the people in the church didn't realize that it was not, they thought it was an affirming church because the church didn't talk about it. They were sneaky about the fact that they had a policy because they wanted people in the doors and they would say things like, everyone's welcome here. All are loved. But this was a campus of a church that still does reparative therapy in their on their premises. And so it was all kind of this sneaky thing, right?
Everyone's welcome to be repaired here.
And so as I'm having this conversation with this couple, it's like, this is a loving, affirming church. We do not discriminate against, you know, blah, blah, blah. At that moment, I pointed over, and there was another couple from the church laying into my housemate, Marty, calling him an abomination. And he's dressed in drag. And so all I had to do was point. And this is a great example of, like, it's this idea that somehow, like, we don't want to be mean. We want people to choose the right thing. And so we're going to just try to woo them at first, but at some point the stick will come out. And and this is part of the problem when you think of Christianity primarily as a set of rules that you have to adhere to out of obedience, that obedience is the kind of the primary way of understanding Christian spirituality. And that if you don't live up to it, you go to hell, but thankfully Jesus was beaten up for you instead. If that's your understanding of Christianity, it's going to always have some sort of purity paradigm, and it's going to always be toxic. Mm-hmm. It reminds me this the other day on Facebook, someone was posting about giving a sermon where they said, well, what happens if we just remove the idea of hell entirely from our discourse around Christianity? And this guy came up to her and said, well, how are we supposed to get people saved?
Yeah, how are we supposed to behave?
Yeah, and yeah. She's like, well, does Jesus have anything positive to offer? And I challenge Christians, especially evangelicals, to start thinking like, what does it look like to preach the gospel only in positive ways? Mm-hmm. And stop using this purity stuff, because that's really why it exists. It's purely a form of control to corral people towards mm-hmm. things. It's just, yeah, anyways.
So Siri has a couple comments here.
Dan, don't
quieter.
It's because I'm talking so much, because I just went on a little rant. Series writes, Dan, don't burst funny's bubbles on biblical family values.
Sorry.
Yeah, I can tell you're contrite, Dan. And then Ceres writes, in that world, and even today, the only way to fend off the shitty biblical family values as a woman is to be born in a wealthy family to leverage a way out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think it'd be really hard to understate kind of the level and the amount of abuse and trauma that has been that has been wrought upon people by all of this. You see this everywhere, right? I mean, as you said, Mark, it once it starts permeating the culture and permeating individuals, right? I mean, you see this in high school, the way that girls get treated and treat each other. And, you know, immediately if some girl does something that, somebody doesn't like, she's a slut, and, then gets all this abuse on social media. And, all of this is coming from this notion that, again, people who are non-heterosexual males, when they take control of their bodies and do whatever they feel like doing, that is perceived as really bad and really scary and an incredible threat to the dominant male culture. And whether, whether it's couched in religious terms or not, I mean, it's the same process that really comes out of this idea.
Yeah. And even like I believed that there was no such thing, like purity culture wasn't misogynistic because I adhered to it. But as I look back, it's like, oh, wow, that was misogyny. Because when I decided that I would proudly proclaim my virginity and wear my Christian t-shirts, I was bullied all the time and called gay. Now, obviously, that's because this exists for women. And if men adhere to it, they are perceived as being feminine, too feminine, and are gay. So, like, that exposes the way that this works. Like, yes, I was an anomaly. Like, it tends to apply to women. But if men try to live by this sort of purity culture stuff, it's like, oh, wait, that's not how it's supposed to work. It's supposed to be for women. Like, that's kind of the clear assumption, generally speaking. Right. And that men, at best, men are supposed to control it, to be disciplined like warriors who only pull out their sword in battle. Like that, and the battle only is between them married couples, like that kind of way of thinking about it, maybe. Yeah, we already got that one. Stefan writes, and like universalists exist. Unfortunately, there used to be a lot more evangelical universalists, believe it or not, and that's kind of a dying breed. But you're right. Like, I mean, I tend to think of myself as a universalist. Taking hell out of it makes all kind of sense. And if I ever brush off hell and bring it back out, it's for rich people usually. But even then, it's still just a metaphor for me. Catherine writes, purity culture control of people's sexuality and body image is so damaging. I'm also interested in how also attempts to control a lot of other things like people's emotions and relationships to power and agency. Mm-hmm. That's right. Like, I feel like this is where the logic of controlling of different kinds of way of speech and posture, like when you start talking about class and how the middle class and affluent classes tend to embody a sort of professionalism, and that lower class people generally don't embody as much. And that's used as a way of shaming and controlling people of lower class. You see this with racism a lot, like having to code switch.
I was just going to say, Well, and again, all of the notions and the horrific comments and concepts about, the way that brown and black people have, all these different sexualities and, over and over again. I'm thinking about this, the slaughter of these Asian women the other day, right? And all of the stuff around, horrendous sexual bigotry around Asian women, and then, how black women are seen and talked about. I mean, it's all connected to to this idea that there's this, you know, one pure way of being, and any deviation from that, right? Anything, yeah, whether it's sexuality, whether it's emotions, whether it's relationships, you know, it just, I mean, what it does, right, is it triggers the dominant male terror. And then suddenly there's this incredible need to control, and that gets, you know, projected onto God. And, you know, given the way creatures and reproduction and everything work in the rest of reality, I really don't think that, you know, God only wants one sexual position between two types of people.
Yeah, that's the reason it's called missionary.
That's right.
Because of its sacredness. I want, yeah. Somebody needs to look it up. If Gus, are you listening? This is a research topic. Where does the term missionary position come from? Laurel writes, similarly, a big old queer here. I am super aware of how purity culture and codes impact my work around racism, inability to act or to fail because there's one perfect way to do it right. Yeah. Laurel, thank you for naming that. This is this sort of needing to do things right. It's like when I say, when you confront someone because they use language that might not be helpful and they get all mad, like, I don't know what words I'm supposed to use. Kind of it shows that at least in part, they're trying to operate from, I need to do the right thing rather than move towards greater integration and wholeness. This is a big problem when those of us who've been conditioned in sort of white Christendom spaces try to pivot towards being a part of liberation. We don't know how to do it very well because we're operating on this right wrong paradigm, yeah, that's still purity based rather than organic holistic paradigm of like mutuality, respect, growth, and learning. And you're right. So that's, I've been in that position all the time where I end up getting frozen because I don't know what to do. The right thing is, and then I have to realize there is no right thing.
Yeah. Well, and somebody who's actually a regular listener here was just saying last night in a different situation that, you know, growing up in church, they heard all about all the wrong things to do. And they almost never heard about what was the right thing to do. Like, what, you know, it was just all about don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't, you know, this is going to get, you know, this constant stream of negativity about behavior. And so of course you're going to grow up with this paralysis, right? It's just, you know, you're just boxed in to, it's like, well, maybe if I just sit here with my legs crossed, like that's the only appropriate behavior. It's horrendous. It's horrendous. All right, moving on.
Catherine writes, one of my earliest church memories is of a man being refused a church council seat in our 1990s mainland church because he was openly gay.
Well, yeah. And the other day on Monday, and this was a comment that we didn't get to, one of our regular listeners was talking about, you know, being shamed in church because she had a kid married. You know, we heard, my guess is everybody listening has heard some kind of story like that. People being shamed because they're divorced. You know, one of my best friends, his older sister, they grew up in this tiny little church in Western Colorado, and she had a baby when she was 19. And they hauled her up in front of the church and just abused her for like 45 minutes. Until finally some little old lady in her 90s said, okay, that's enough, you know. And you know, any sense that this has anything to do with God or anything loving or positive, I mean, you really have to be in a serious delusional state to believe that.
Yeah. I mean, this feeds right into when we were doing Fascism Fridays, and hopefully we'll inject some fascism on Friday.
On Friday, yes. Sake.
But yeah, this is where it's clear that a compassionate, loving God who brings us into wholeness and completion isn't in view, but an authoritarian figure that you could substitute with pretty much any other authority figure. It's the worship of authority. And the way you worship authority is by using control. That's mm-hmm. what purity culture is. Shen writes, just wanting to name how deeply I'm appreciating these conversations on purity, disembodied culture, and also your inclusion of non-binary folks. Y'all bring me some hope. Thank you. Yeah, thank you for coming.
You're welcome. And, you know, this is, and I do just want to, you know, lift this out even more because, again, in the ancient world, there were non-binary people and gay people, right? Mm-hmm. This has been around forever. This is
some sort of modern innovation.
No, it's not a modern innovation and choice. And you know, this is the hypocrisy of all of this, right? Because these folks were very much involved and integrated into society in all kinds of different ways. But then there's this sort of sense that, you know, it's like this bad, weird secret, right? And, you know, and again, this is just all about control. This is all about who's in charge and can we, do we see people as property, and then we're going to control them? And, you know, and I think we really have to name that very clearly. Yeah, and then ask the question, like, why is it so terrifying for people, every person, to be able to be freely in their body and to be able to freely make choices about what they do with their body? Like, why is that a problem, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a good question to meditate on because it doesn't seem to me like it should be a problem. So, yeah.
Stefan writes, the biblical family values, which actually include polygamy, concubines, marrying one's slaves, levirate marriage, prostitution, except for daughters of priests, and also killing disobedient kids. Yes, killing. Deuteronomy 21, 18 through 21. I love conservatives being confused when confronted with this. Well, that's the Old Testament, which we don't use except for when we need to for a war. And
shit. That's right.
Good point. Like, I mean, there's a lot of memes about family values, and it's...
I mean, it really is hilarious because I often wonder when people start talking about biblical this, that, or the other thing, like if they've actually ever read the Bible. I mean, it's just the stuff that comes out is so funny. I mean, you know, this notion that, you know, everybody in the Northern Kingdom of Israel was like some sort of Leave It to Beaver commercial. I mean, it's like, that's not what it says. So... I get very confused.
So much of our problems and our moral understanding come from reading the Bible in a horrible way. Like it's but the Bible, like, it's funny. I've said this in churches, and it's theologically not a controversial thing to say, but people get freaked out when I tell them the Bible serves us. We don't serve the Bible. And they're like, because instinctively, a lot of people treat the Bible as though it's God. You know, it's pretty, that's pretty damn gross.
Right. Yeah. And then they don't read it properly.
Yeah. And they only do. Yeah. We are so easily self-deceived and led astray by powerful oppression. Catherine writes, speaking of missionaries, 19th century missionary literature is a disturbingly rich source for these all-encompassing white supremacist purity views. That's for damn sure. I have half a paper written on it if anybody wants a collab project.
Yes.
I know you're a historian, it's your job, but man, that must be not fun reading this shit.
Right. To read all that. It's painful.
Gus writes, it seems on brand for boring vanilla sex to be the kind name for the Christendom project. It'd be weird if missionary position were something that was exciting and good news to learn about.
Well, it, you know, and what it very much fits with, right, is this this thing that you see all the time, which really is that Christianity is not supposed to be fun, right? And it's sort of like, you know, unless it really hurts, it can't be Christianity,
which again is this twisting of this whole idea of the cross as a driving lens.
Exactly. And, Yeah, I mean, only the Puritans could invent this thing called bundling, where you get into bed with a board, you're just supposed to like slightly cuddle with this giant 2x12 and but separate you. I mean, this doesn't sound like fun at all.
No. Ceres writes, queer, trans, and non-binary were traditionally in sage-like roles in many indigenous societies.
Yeah,
Yeah. I mean,
absolutely.
there's also, it's amazing the more you look into it, it's like, because we tend to think in Western culture that somehow Western society, as we understand it, white Western patriarchal society is normative, and that most traditional societies were like us, and we project our shit all over the world and can't even understand how the world is wonderfully varied like this. That was one of the big eye-openers when I started learning this, and I didn't want to because it somehow blew up this idea that that things, the further back you go, the more pure it is, and it gets corrupted by communism and Satan or something over time. Stefan points out that eunuchs were either non-binary or trans women. Definitely queer and by modern understanding of not performing gender the way we understand it. Jesus mentioned them in a positive light, and they were accepted in the early church. Ellen says, when I was growing up, the first F word I learned about was fun. Yeah.
Well, that seems like a good place to end.
I'm going to start doing like, it's like watching Beverly Hills Cop on network television. Fun you. It was. So I'm going to start using fun as a swear word now. Thank you, Ellen.
All right.
Thanks for the
So
comments, everybody. It was fun.
it
We'll be back on Friday and continue and
Yeah.
finish this topic and have
For
new things next week. So.
fascism fun Friday.
Okay. That's right.
Bye.
See y'all.
Thank you.